Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Triathlon Age Group Journey, a podcast adventure for you, the age group triathlete.
As triathletes, we love watching and racing with the pros. However, we've learned that what they do is not always possible for us. So this podcast is for you and for us, age group triathletes that want to be part of the conversation on being the best triathlete that we all can be with our limited time, our talent, our resources, and level of effort. As age groupers, coaches, parents, and full-time working professionals, your hosts, myself, Jillian Carlson, along with Jay Kune and Matt Sommer, will be your guide on this adventure. Each podcast, we will invite other age group triathletes of varying abilities and experiences to discuss topics that are pertinent to you in order to have some fun and hopefully share some insights that might make your training and racing just a little bit better.
So this is not only our first podcast together, but we're actually here in person in St. George, Utah, after racing yesterday for Jillian and today with Matt and I at the 70.3 World Champs. We have raced together before in Ironman Lake Placid, and I think that's where we realized we might have a synergy to do something like this.
Absolutely. I think just sitting around after the race, before the race in Placid, we were having such great conversations. And I think this just kind of evolved. It felt like the calling of sharing our passion, our interests, our varying opinions, which I think is super important on different topics. And I think that's what's going to make this podcast so appealing and so meaningful for so many of you is we do differ on opinions on so many different topics. You're going to see what works for me doesn't always work for Jay. What I think of something Jillian may not agree with. We know that it's not a cookie cutter approach out there in triathlon. That's what this is all about. Just discussing it, having conversations about it, and helping you as our fellow age group triathlete figure out what's best for you.
Absolutely. And I mean, the one thing we did realize is that we love talking triathlon and we love hearing different opinions and different ways of doing things and sharing our experiences. And we know that we love hearing each other's experiences. And so we're so excited to bring this podcast together as an opportunity for us to save our families from hearing nonstop tri talk and sharing it with each other, and then having the opportunity to bring on guests and hear their story, because everybody's story matters. Everybody has a story to tell, and we can't wait to hear them.
Let's be honest. You know you've met a triathlete when within the first 5 minutes it comes out. Every triathlete I've ever met, instantly, that's the identity that they carry, and they want to talk about the races that they did or where they're going, their training. Never fails if I have a race shirt on or if I'm wearing, even if I'm at the pool and I have a swim cap on, people are like, oh, you're a triathlete? It's like, well, yeah. And then it evolves from there, and conversations, which might be 2 minutes, turn into 20 minutes.
So as Jillian said, each podcast, we're going to invite another age group triathlete on. So you're not just listening to the three of us, but also hearing from our friends, our followers on social media, our acquaintances from all the different teams we interact with. So you'll get all kinds of points of view for our podcast. One segment each week, Matt is going to share his favorite quote that he posted on his social media channels. We'll discuss why it's important to him and what it means to all of us. So Matt, which is it this week?
Well, I think the one that speaks to me the most, that really is the basis of everything, what I do in my world, my living, my coaching, my profession. It was shared with me quite a long time ago when I started my career by a local physician in North Carolina. And he looked at me one day and said, Matt, running water never freezes. And I sat there and thought about it for a second. And he's 100% right. Just keep moving. No matter what you're doing in life, keep moving. Because if you keep moving, you always are going forward. And that just resonated with me. It's on my email tagline. And that's the one piece of advice I probably share with all my athletes that I coach, with all the clients that I work with on a personal training basis, and even with the kids that I talk to, is just keep moving. Running water never freezes.
That's a great one. Though I will say my toes and my fingers might disagree with never freezing based on the conditions coming out of the water at the 70.3 World Champs in St. George on Friday morning. But I kept moving.
No doubt we got a new meaning for that one. Yeah. I think it really speaks to the level of consistency we need in this sport, in how we manage it in our life, and being there for our families and juggling all of this triathlon stuff. That's definitely what resonates with me from that quote.
Yeah, I think it's definitely applicable to all areas of our lives, not just athletics, but everything that we put our time, our energy, and our resources into. And you just got to keep moving. No matter what it is, keep moving forward, always working for 1% better every day.
Absolutely.
Fantastic. Now, being our first, I think it would make sense for us to go into a little deeper dive about all of our triathlon journeys here. Jillian, would you like to start?
Yeah.
And talk a little bit about your journey to triathlon?
Sure. So I was sitting in an audit room at probably 11 p.m. one night when a coworker told me about how she ventured to do 24 marathons by the time she was 24. And I thought that was crazy, but I also realized, well, I could work out for 3 hours, but I just couldn't run for 3 hours straight. So she said, you should do a triathlon. And I said, what is that? And she told me it's swim, bike, and run, and that there was a local sprint try coming up, the Danskin Women's Only Triathlon. And she recommended that I give it a shot. And I said, well, I don't really swim. I did swim lessons when I was little. And she had recommended that, she's like, it's only 400 yards. You'll be okay. And I thought, all right, I can do it. So I recruited my sister and my cousins, and we all registered and did the first try, and I caught the bug. However, at the time, I was in public accounting and working way too many hours, having kids, and I just was not able to continue to recruit my sisters and cousins to join me and find the time to do the training. And so I sat on the back burner until my brother-in-law, 10 years later, said, hey, I have a crazy idea. Who wants to do a 70.3 half Ironman? You can still call yourself an Ironman, but you only have to do half the distance. Looking back, I don't call myself an Ironman doing the half distance, but I thought it was a great idea. And actually, I honestly thought it was crazy, but then my cousin said she was in, and there was no way that if she's doing it, that I wasn't going to do it. So I signed up for Coeur d'Alene in 2018, and that was my first 70.3, and the bug hit me for good, and I've been locked in since then.
How much time have you cut off since Coeur
d'Alene on the 70.3? I'm not going to count Oregon Salem 70.3 because of the downriver swim. So outside of that one, I'll go with about an hour and a half. Yeah.
Nice.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I got into triathlon for my 30th birthday. I'm 45 years old now, and I did my first triathlon August 25th of 2007 to celebrate my 30th birthday, and it was a complete disaster. That summer, a couple local physicians at the country club I work at were all participating in Ironman Florida, and a buddy of mine was doing it as well. It's kind of like, I think I could do that. Not the Ironman, but do a triathlon. So I found one actually on my birthday. So I signed up for it. I spent some time training, was swimming in the pool, borrowed a road bike from somebody, and I'd always ran. That was kind of what I always did for exercise. Got out there on race day. It was at a local sprint triathlon, a 500 meter pool swim. I emphasize pool. I'll come back to that in a second. And then a 15 mile bike ride and then a 5K run. So I get in the water, jump in, and it went from there. I doggy paddled the whole thing, breaststroke, couldn't even put my head in the water, freaked out. My whole family at the time was sitting there shaking their head at me, and I didn't think I was going to make it out of a pool swim. I was mortified. Got through it, took me probably close to 20 minutes to swim 500 meters, which I'm a little embarrassed to say, so I've come a long way there.
We've all started somewhere. Yeah.
But once I got out of the water, I found my comfort zone on the bike and on the run, and I finished in about an hour and a half. So I put two-thirds of it together that day. Afterwards, like many of you, I was so proud of myself. I went and celebrated with the biggest meal possible after a sprint triathlon, which was a little embarrassing.
Yeah. Do you remember what you had?
Yeah, it was a huge burrito from this place in Chapel Hill called Cosmic Cantina. If you're ever in Chapel Hill or Durham, North Carolina, by the way, amazing burritos. That night, I came home, was determined, and I signed up for a 70.3. My family looked at me and asked, and this 70.3, by the way, was in the ocean. And they looked at me and said, how are you going to swim 1.2 miles in the ocean if you can't even swim 500 meters in a pool? Well, that tells you a little bit. I was so determined. I said, I'll figure it out. A year later, I did my first 70.3, and the rest is history. I've had the bug ever since. Iron distance, 70.3, Olympic sprint, everything. I don't know. I wouldn't change it for the world. It's such a great lifestyle. I've met so many amazing people, have had so many great experiences, been able to see so many different parts of the world. I've been to France for Worlds, been here, obviously this year for St. George, all over the country, Oregon, Washington, Des Moines, Iowa, Maryland, North Carolina, just a great way to get out, see people, see different parts of the world and meet and just have a great time doing what I love.
Either of you have a sporting background as a kid?
You know, it's interesting. I did the obligatory swim lessons as a child, but I also, in that first sprint, found myself doggy paddling, backstroking. And then I would see somebody go past me and the competitive drive would say, oh, no way. I can totally swim that fast. So began frantic dog paddling that didn't get me anywhere. So I'd accept out of breath and back on my back doing a backstroke. And again, 400 yards. So I ended up signing up for swim lessons where I was doing the lessons and the kids were in the pool and my kids were in the bleachers with the other kids' parents watching me take swim lessons. But, you know, I had a 70.3 that I had to do, similar to Matt.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah, I definitely grew up playing sports. Now, swimming was not one of them at all. I've never, embarrassed to say, had a formal swim lesson in my entire life. I grew up playing soccer and lacrosse. Jay, you and I actually played soccer together through middle school and high school. And I also played high school lacrosse. Didn't really even start running until I was 21. And Jillian, if I'm not mistaken, you were a collegiate softball player, correct?
Yeah. So 60 feet was my favorite distance to run. Maybe 120 if I hit a double. I was pretty excited. Right. I did do cross country in high school, but I would caveat that I was on the cross country team, but I thought that a 5K was a half marathon and that anybody that ran like 7 or 10 miles, that's what marathon actually meant. I didn't know that was 26 miles and I still thought they were crazy. We had a run called the pickup run and it was a 7 mile run. And our coach would, my high school bordered a lot of farmland. And so anybody that couldn't make the 7 mile run, he'd drive around and you'd hop in the bed of the pickup. And you bet I was one of the ones hopping in the bed of that pickup at about 4 miles because I was like, who runs that far? Like I am just not made for distance running. But the people on that cross country team were the most amazing people I've ever met and so incredibly supportive of me and my inability to run long distance. And they didn't care how slow I was. I was a runner and it just fueled this desire to keep running, albeit I was perfectly content at the 3 to 4 mile range. That was perfect. But you start to get a little comfortable and you start to push yourself and you say, well, what could I go farther? And can I get faster? When you get faster, you can go farther in the same amount of time.
You had a little taste of the triathlon life back then, sounds like. Well, I asked about sports because that was kind of how my journey started. Way back the year I probably before meeting Matt in fifth grade, I actually won my first triathlon at field day, which was dribbling a soccer ball, throwing a frisbee, and riding your bike around a couple trees in the field at the school. But I was always just totally captivated by Ironman World Championships. And I can remember as a kid watching the ABC Wide World of Sports, and it was always in the back of my mind. So I played soccer growing up, played until I was about 32 years old. Life, you know, had other plans, and I ended up stopping playing. And before I knew it, I was 195 pounds, over 50 pounds heavier than I am now, I think. And I had to make a change. I mean, life was taking me in the wrong direction there, blood pressure up, all of that. So I was 37 years old at that point and decided I'm just going to start walking, and after New Year's resolution type thing. And then by, you know, May, I was jogging again around the neighborhood, and we went on a family vacation to Orlando, and we were staying in a community that had a pool and a gym. And I was like, well, I'm going to go swim, and then I'm going to ride the stationary bike and then run and see what happens and do my first like personal triathlon, I guess. So I came back to the house. I said to my wife, I think I'm going to sign up for triathlon. And it was the Osprey Sprint on the Eastern Shore of Maryland. But unfortunately, the swim was canceled, so it was just a bike run.
Those favorite words.
Unfortunately. Yeah.
So since that happened, I was like, okay, well, I'm going to sign up for one next weekend because I got to get this done. It's, you know, killing me. And then a hurricane came in and canceled that one. So then I had to wait until June the next year to finally get a sprint done in Rock Hall, Maryland. Was completely enraptured with the sport at that point. And here we are.
I think it's easy to get addicted to the sport. And I use the word addicted with purpose. I think we all got started in the sport for different reasons. And I think the biggest thing that I have found is, and that I encourage as a coach, is don't compete with anyone other than yourself. I can't tell you how many times I stress that to the athletes I work with. And I try to make sure that I personally follow that same advice. Is when I race, I try to beat Matt Sommer version 2021. So today was all about being better than I was last year. It's not about being better than anybody else out there. But if I go out there and put down my best hand, it's a good day. And that to me, that's what this is about. It's just about self-improvement. I said it earlier, 1% better every day. Some days you have it, some days you don't. I think it's important to remember there are ebbs and flows with triathlon. And, you know, just the opportunity to be out there is a blessing. We have good days, we have bad days, but just being out there is a great day.
Absolutely.
No doubt. So here we are. We're in St. George.
Talk about great days.
Yeah, huh? Yeah, let's just talk about our race experience. I mean, how did Ironman do? What's St. George like? Whatever.
I can't say enough about this venue. It's my first time out here in St. George, Utah. It's been amazing. Nothing but beautiful to start with. The course, the atmosphere, the weather. I think we got super lucky. Some of the ladies may disagree. It was very cold yesterday for them. Huge respect to those ladies getting out there in 38-degree weather and jumping in that water. Jay and I had a little different experience today. He and I, fortunately, in the 45 to 49 age group, we didn't have to start the race till 9:17 a.m. today, so it was considerably warmer for us air temperature-wise. The water was the same temperature, but the air obviously made a huge difference. Race volunteers were amazing. I feel like the whole event was seamless, from packet pickup to post-race to the aid stations. Not one single bad experience on my end. I've done a lot of races all over. I feel like Ironman really had all cylinders firing. It was a well-oiled machine today.
Yeah. To be honest, when I thought of St. George and the desert, being from the Pacific Northwest, usually greenery is beautiful to me. And so I didn't necessarily think of this place as beautiful. The red rocks, everything was the same color. The buildings blend into the backdrop. I didn't necessarily get the appeal. And then Matt and I had gone out on a shakeout ride, and it was right before sunset, and that sun was setting on the red rocks, and the warm sun was beating on the back. And all of a sudden, just this sense of beauty and just absolutely cool looking changed my mind about being out here in St. George. And I saw the beauty that everybody had talked about. And it was just amazing. I'm so glad that we were able to do that ride, because during the race, you're not quite seeing the beauty quite as much. You might be a little more focused on the people in front of you. But I will say the location out here and the abundance of places to stay that are relatively close to downtown where you need to do the check-in, the multi-transition made a little bit difficult. But to Matt's point, I think it was very well organized such that the flow went pretty well. And it was overall a really good, I think, experience.
I'll definitely pile on to the beauty. We were treated to the most amazing sunrise this morning over the mountains, over the lake. I think they said it might be the most photographed Ironman shot, because it was surreal.
Yeah.
And definitely fell in love with the canyons. I did not get to ride the bike course at all beforehand. So there were multiple times I was looking around, enjoying the rides on some of the climbs. So that was nice. I have to give a lot of comments to the crowd support on the run. Every piece of the run course had people on it everywhere.
Yeah.
And I've never had that in any race. And I don't think it's just because of a world championship. It's because of how the run course was set up.
Yeah.
The community, the spectators
were out there. It was phenomenal how well.
The only other race I've ever seen that at was the Boston Marathon, which is a state holiday. And I mean, that those 26 miles bumper to bumper of people, and today was the same way.
Yeah, it was awesome to be in that atmosphere.
Did you guys also notice the people out on in the middle of the bike ride? Actually, there was this hill climb, and you almost felt like you were at Challenge Roth, where the people are right there cheering you on, and you could reach out and touch them. And being out in the middle of the ride, in the middle of nowhere, I just remember thinking, where did these people come from? This is so cool and so fun.
They were running alongside. They had costumes on. It was reminiscent of Savage Man, Jack.
Yeah, oh
where
yeah.
People were out there running the on the course next to you. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I definitely, you know, with the split transitions, that was new for me as well. This is my first time having that. It was well organized. It was intuitive. And I definitely think it was not as intimidating as it might be for someone. If this becomes your first two-transition race, they did a really good job at defining it.
After the race, people had a better understanding why and how everything was handled. I think at the time that it was being done, a lot of people, you heard the, well, this is weird, this is stupid. But I think after the race, it became very evident as to why and worked. The volunteers in transitions were amazing. I can't say enough about them as well. And I saw people helping athletes get their socks on, helping them to get arm warmers on. And then in the run section, just kind of, I mean, I saw one guy getting his calves rubbed by one of the volunteers because he was cramping up. And I'm just like, wow, that's really above and beyond. But no, it was absolutely phenomenal. And then the finish line experience was great. And I thought after the finish line, just coming through, I know Jillian, you commented yesterday that every finisher had a volunteer walk them by their shoulder all the way around the corner to make sure they were physically okay before they released them.
Yeah.
You know, even today when the young lady that came over to help me, I was like, I'm okay. She goes, are you sure? And I kept saying, yes, I'm okay. And she stayed with me the whole way, but super kind. I'm sure definitely saw some people that needed some help at the end. That's why they're there.
I felt like every transition, it was like there was a volunteer that was assigned to me, because I'd enter the transition and it was like my designated person with my bag. What do you need? They're going through my bag. And do you need this? Do you need that? and give me, you know, give me everything you don't need. And I packed it all up and bundled it up super nicely into my helmet when I picked everything up. I was like, wow, I think you organize this better than I do.
I know we were talking earlier before the podcast about the number of kids out there volunteering too. And I thought that was pretty cool, yeah. Especially a bag pickup. I think that was one of the neatest things, Jay, when we went to pick our bags up, the adults were calling out the number and these middle school kids, I would assume, that were racing down the lines to see who could get the bags first.
Yeah.
They come running back with it. And you got these middle school boys and middle school girls that were like, it's so sincere and saying, hey, great job today. Like, that was so cool. And I mean, yeah, it's just pretty neat to see it in their eyes, you know?
Totally. Hopefully future triathletes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So Jillian, what did it mean to you having a women's only day? How did it turn out? Does that make it special?
Yeah, I think so. It's definitely unique in that not as many people out on the bike, maybe a little bit challenging at times, because then if you are getting passed, you know, it is by women. Sometimes it's fun being a gal out there passing some of the guys and whatnot, but it does make it crowded. So
passes a lot of guys. Let me point that out.
Thanks. Sometimes, and some of them aren't so happy about that. But overall, though, I would say it was really neat to have the 2 days and the women's only day, because you knew who was in your age group. And I think just starting organized by age group was a little helpful for those of us that might be, you know, trying to keep track a little bit. The other thing, it was just fun having the guys out able to kind of cheer and support you on. And selfishly for me, I loved knowing I was done. And I actually got to go follow and chase you guys around.
Jillian was an awesome cheer person.
Phenomenal.
It was so fun to wear that Sherpa hat and know what it's like. My sister is quite often my Sherpa at races for me, as well as her husband, my brother-in-law. We tend to do the tries together. She's an avid biker, but Sherpa extraordinaire for sure. And just the work that goes into it, trying to track you guys, make sure you have enough phone battery, get up to the different spots at St. George.
You were everywhere today. I mean, you were at the swim start, and then next thing I know, you're down there as we're jumping in the water. And then next thing I know, you're at Snow Canyon. And then all of a sudden, you're at the run start and everywhere. It was phenomenal.
But it was just fun watching you guys do your races and cheer you on, as opposed to just maybe a quick, hey, nice job, as we're passing on a looped course in a race.
Speaking of Sherpas, we have another one in the room. My father, John, never misses a race. He's always in my corner, but he took some extra duties on with Jillian and Matt. And I think everything Jillian said, I think I've seen Dad running around as well. So we love having you around, and thanks for being here. He's here intently listening.
Entirely my pleasure.
So the guys had their own day.
Yeah.
Yeah. How did that go?
So Matt and I looked at the participant list beforehand. It was 4,282 men registered for today. And it looks like 3,550 finishers. Boy, was it crowded.
Yes. A lot of people out there on the course. On the bike, it was quite tricky trying to maintain an adequate distance between the rider in front of you. Needless to say, there's always going to be the group that choose to not follow that rule. I didn't see too many penalties being handed out to age group triathletes today, which as a coach, I have my opinion on. Save that for another time. I definitely felt the course, it was hard out there on the bike, and then the run course was packed.
Yeah.
Needless to say, I felt like it was ants marching. It was just single file running, but it was a lot of fun.
It's about 12 feet wide.
Yes.
Three across. There was a slow lane, middle lane, and fast lane. And you worked your way in and out all day long.
I honestly expected significantly less people out there, being that we started dead last at 9:17.
It was pretty surprising.
Yeah, it really was. It really blew my mind. Had a really good run today myself, so I know I made up a lot of time on people, but I was still shocked by how many people were out there when we got to the run
course. Yeah, when I approached T2 and looked over at the run course as you come in back into town,
I thought
my eyes
must
have been as big as dollar bills.
I think I heard more on your lefts on the run course than on the bike course.
Absolutely.
Which is pretty telling how congested it did get.
And this also goes back to, and again, one of the things I, from a coach perspective, is a lot of people overbike today. And I think it exposed weaknesses in their run today. I definitely feel like this course with Snow Canyon Climb being strategically placed around mile 40 and just the rollers throughout really sabotaged a lot of people's runs. I think a lot of people that came here obviously have amazing run talent as age groupers. I've been there. I've done it. I've overbiked and I've made that long walk. It is not fun. And I definitely think there was a lot of that out there today. And I think at a world championship, more so, you're going to have people out there really trying to buck up, show off, and really play that ace on the bike.
Yeah.
So quick question. Now, obviously, I had the benefit of racing first and watching you guys second. Do you guys think that having, you know, come out and you guys actually came out and watched me and Matt, some of your other athletes as well, and how do you think that impacted your race day, or did it not? Are you glad you had that
totally
opportunity?
Benefited.
Okay.
To talk to you, Jillian, and others after your day to get a gauge on the cold, for
any
one.
Any intel is beneficial.
Yeah, the intel was absolutely beneficial. It turned out for us to be a T1 decision on what to do with the cold, where you all really had to deal with it.
Yeah.
Right.
And then...
Well, for you and I particularly, I think...
Watching the earlier men's waves was actually a little creepy because some of them were
much
really
more
cold
covered
and very covered up. Yeah, but then also watching the run, we, at least I, got a lot of insight on, okay, plot up this hill, get to the top, your pace is going to drop, but you're going to have this big long downhill to, so a lot of those little cues we benefited from.
Definitely.
Yeah. Good.
So I would hope in the future, maybe Ironman would switch the days and let men go first so the women have that benefit, because that would definitely make it more fair.
Oh, absolutely. And I also think we've talked about this before, and I know the debate's been out there about Kona as well, is Saturday is considered the showcase day. And it's like, share the stage with the ladies. They're just as badass as anyone else. And give the men Friday, give the ladies Saturday. And Kona, give the men Thursday, give the ladies Saturday. That's what it's about.
Definitely.
Question, because this race was, the first time in 2 years or 3 years because of COVID, which possibly increased the size or the amount of people racing yesterday and today?
Yeah.
Is that, so future events potentially would be a lower number of people racing?
Yeah, definitely did increase the number of participants. And future years, it's going to be up to Ironman. I mean, the fact is now they have 2 days booked and they can allocate more slots in their mind. So it'll be interesting. I do think 3,550 for this course was really tight for the men.
Yeah.
Maybe 3,000 would have been more comfortable for both. And, you know, let's hit those typical numbers, I would
think. They're going to have to be, if they continue this type of structure, having the 2 days, the venue is going to have to be able to support those people. Right. I mean, St. George was able to accommodate that. I do feel like there was enough accommodations, the restaurants. I think the local businesses obviously benefited from it. I know yesterday, Jane, you and I were kind of actually sitting there joking around, and just on the men's race alone, I think we said there were 4,282 men at approximately $750 a piece. If you do the math, that's $3,211,500 just on men's registration fees.
Yeah.
Not including the women.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money. And if you got to imagine every single person, all 4,000 participants that came in are staying at an accommodation, whether it's an Airbnb, a VRBO, a hotel, renting a house, whatever it might be, dining out, renting cars. They're pumping money into the community. So it's definitely lucrative for the local community. I mean, not to mention the air flight getting in.
Yeah.
Ridiculous amount of money being spent.
Yeah. So what's next for you guys in terms of the immediate part of this season? Are we finished this year?
Yeah. It's been a long, long season. I started in April. I didn't realize this until I kind of sat down one day. Between April and... now in October, I've raced 3 full Ironmans, 270.3s, a broken Ironman, and the Boston Marathon.
Yeah.
So it's the only month I have not raced was August. Yeah, it's been busy. I'm ready for a little R&R.
Matt's due for some rest, no doubt. That's a heck of a, just one, that's a resume for several years for most people.
I wish I could say they were all good race results.
Well,
I would say,
you were determined.
Yeah, there's no, there's no quitting.
Jillian, what was this year for you and what's next?
Yeah, this year was also full of COVID deferrals and race cancellations. I was supposed to do Sacramento last year and the bomb cyclone hit. So that was my first full, supposed to be my first full, and ended up turning into Placid, which I am 110% grateful for. But it also fell in the, right smack in the middle of three other 70.3s. And so I had four races within about a 6 or 7 week time span where I rolled straight from Coeur d'Alene to Salem 70.3, then Placid, and then right into Boulder. I got a nice little month break or so before St. George. And before all of that, even I did that same broken full at the end of May, actually. So it's been quite a long season full of the very distance. So I'm kind of excited to take a break. I love racing, but I also enjoy the process. So I'm excited to get back into that development phase and take what I've learned and keep building on it and see what next year has.
Yeah.
How about you, Jay?
Oh, well, I had started with an Olympic with the Kinetic Multisport in Lake Nakamixon, Pennsylvania. I just like to say that word. We, Dad and I camped in the rain overnight before that one, so that was fun. Had my first DNF at Eagleman, two flat tires on the bike with no support. I hung out with a really great finisher picks photographer for 3.5 hours at the farthest point in the Blackwater Refuge. I helped a guy change his tire, so I was support for someone else. Yeah. That was a lot of fun. Then Lake Placid was my first full Ironman, and with you guys, and turned into quite a dream race for me. And
because Jay, what was your dream before?
To qualify and race in Kona by the age of 50.
And how old are you?
45.
Yeah.
And what number Ironman was that for you, by the way?
That was number one.
Yeah. Yeah. Now Jay's a little modest, so I'm going to chime in here for a second. He is probably one of the most humble and disciplined triathletes I know. Very meticulous in his planning, the process, his approach, everything about it. When you meet him, if you ever get the chance to, you'll see that in within minutes. Analyzes everything. He knows the course. He knows the transitions. He watches every piece of training to a T. And if you don't follow him on Instagram, it really was a really cool thing that he did, the Kona by 50. Every day he chronicled his journey and his desire to conquer that dream. And I'll be honest, Jay, we stayed together in Lake Placid. That was your first Ironman. It was Jillian's first Ironman. Just being there to celebrate that with both of you all, but then for you to actually earn that Kona spot there. And I still remember, it's in my mind, you and Tammy, that's Jay's wife, her just looking at you saying, go take that. And just the tears in your eyes and that sense of accomplishment. I teared up for you.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
And,
it was hard not to get choked up.
Yeah. I mean, in the pouring rain.
Yeah.
Because
it started raining right as we,
So a double world championship for Jay this year.
Have you seen his finished picture that was the photographer?
The video?
The still one.
I'll share that. Yeah. That YouTube video. I was fully expecting to make those daily videos for 5 years. So I'm not going to deny I'm pretty happy I don't have to do that anymore. But I'm loving what we're about to do with this podcast. So yeah, this is it for me this year to do Kona. And then this 3 weeks later was quite a dream and a lot of fun. And I'm really happy to be here finishing it off with you guys. So
yeah.
Why don't we wrap up with one last thing of what do you want to get out of this podcast?
I'm looking just to create a community. I think a community of age group triathletes is what we all crave, desire, and want to learn from. We all want those people that we can toss ideas off of that are interested in hearing what we have to say and want to be heard. You know, whether it's a new pair of running shoes, whether it's the newest power meter, the newest Garmin, whatever it might be, we're all gear techs out there. We all love spending our money to get faster. And
Or finding ways to save our money to get faster since we aren't sponsored.
Well, but on the other side, we also all have drawers full of things that we thought were going to make us faster. And we're going to talk about that as well. I want to learn. I want to learn from you all just as much as maybe sharing some nuggets of wisdom that I've gained over the years.
What about you, Jillian?
Exactly. The community, the being able to interact and talk with you guys and see, you know, I'm on the West Coast and you guys are both on the East Coast, different environments, different training goals. And it's just been so fun following you guys and hearing your stories. And so I'm excited to keep that up and really to hear other people's stories. I think that excites me the most are the guests that we plan to have and hear other people's journeys. It just is so inspiring. And I know that it touches a lot of people beyond just us. And if it doesn't, That's fine. I still want to hear about it. And so I'm really excited for that.
I didn't think about our differences in environment and how it contributes to how we train. And I think that I didn't even think about that. That's something that we can be able to share with folks from definitely a hotter, humid, more humid climate for Matt. And what would you say? Pacific Northwest,
rainy, wet.
Damp.
Yeah, cool.
And, you know, the Mid-Atlantic in Baltimore, Maryland is not too much different than North Carolina, but we get a little more winter.
Yeah,
and,
definitely.
Definitely a lot more indoor training and dealing with the colder elements with training. And I agree with you, Jillian. I think for me, this is about the people that we're going to talk to. And we're so excited to really get started with that. And we have a lot of great names of folks who are in all walks of life. And I think they're going to be really inspiring, not only for us, but certainly, and we hope, for our listeners. And I love how Jillian said earlier to save our families from the triathlon talk.
Absolutely.
This will be cathartic for us, and I'm looking forward to that as well.
And we definitely want to hear from you all, whatever it might be, all walks, all different areas of triathlon. If you've got an interesting story, you want to share it with us and see if it might be something that we could bring to the podcast, we would love to hear from you. Yep. You can reach us via email or through social media, our Instagram handle.
Yeah, you can email us at triathlonagegroupjourney@gmail.com. And our Instagram is @triathlonagegroupjourney. And you can reach out to us on those two platforms.
We've got a lot of interesting people that we're going to be bringing their stories to you. If you feel like your story might be something of interest, give us a shout out. Let us know. We'd love to connect.
Anything else?
Looking forward to hearing your journey.
Yeah.
All right, folks. Well, thank you for joining us on the Triathlon Age Group Journey. We'd love it if you give us a review on whatever platform you listen to this podcast, and we definitely want your feedback. So email or Instagram anytime. We will talk with you next time.
Bye.
Bye.